Thank you so much. Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, my research assistant who helped me with this article is in the audience, Adela, and a couple of my first year law students decided to show up to this gathering, so welcome. I was going to start with the caveat that everyone, I think everyone who isn't a political philosopher started their presentations with, which was like, I'm not a political philosopher, right? But Marie-Claude Prémont did that for me yesterday when she said that she was merely a lowly law professor, which made me think, like, if Marie-Claude Prémont is a lowly law professor, what does that make me? And so, you know, subterranean, maybe. I'm going to bring to this to the problem that I'm addressing today. I think the perspective of someone who does public law. And what does this mean? So there are two sort of implications of approaching this problem from the perspective of a public law person, right? So first is a kind of obsession or focus on institutions and institutional design. It's sort of one of the underlying currents of every big debate in public law, right? And second, a kind of translation of a problem into the terms that public law scholars use. As I said in the paper, in the introduction for this paper, right, the debate that I'm addressing typically draws on language that is sort of federalism-type language. It's sort of it addresses issues of coordination, economic efficiency, legitimate regulation, and distributive fairness over areas that have overlapping geographic jurisdictions, right? Territorial jurisdictions. So the general focus of the paper will be on institutional design. The general debate within which it will be situated will be a debate that's sort of well known within the legal literature. It's a work in progress, and I think that the most helpful comments I think that I could receive would be, I think, are questions that would press either my characterization or my resolution of the normative debates that have arisen in the legal literature, and possibly some counterexamples and challenges to my characterization of actual empirical facts and of how things work on the ground. Okay, so the presentation will proceed in three parts. I'll begin with a description of the existing debate, which, as I noted in the paper, is between groups of scholars that you can loosely call localists and regionalists. I will then move to a criticism of each of the positions within the debate, right? And then I will close with what I call, what I propose as a kind of institutional resolution of the debate through this institution that I've called, that is known in British Columbia as the regional district system. So first let me outline the positions in the debate. There's, as has been mentioned several times through the proceedings of the conference, there is a position out there set up by Charles Thibault, and it's had quite a bit of influence in the legal literature. And also, I'll very briefly set out the position. And the claim, as several people have noted, is that in municipal law, in local government law, it is a good thing to have lots and lots of small municipalities competing with one another, right, to provide service packages to citizens. Right? And the reason this kind of a system of local government is a good thing, scholars say, is because it provides for efficient provision of public goods, right? That is, various local governments will be competing against one another to provide the best prices and the best services available to citizens who are consumers moving among the local government marketplace, right? This is a second reason why people argue for this particular vision of local government systems, and it has to do with democratic legitimacy. That is, providing these kinds of governments allows for the monitoring and the participation of citizens in the governance of their own affairs at the level of government that has the most impact on their lives. Right? So you want governments that are small, local, manageable for citizens to participate in. And in an influential work, Bill, is drawn on by a lot of law professor, Bill Fischel of Dartmouth, sort of brings these two arguments together in what he calls the home voter hypothesis. Right? That is, homeowners create efficient marketplaces of housing stock, right? And the way that they provide for insurance for their housing stock is by participating in local governments, right, and creating regulations that protect their interests, their property interests, right? So that is, in general, as a general sketch, the localist position, right? Claim for a particular system of local governments and the advantages that it is understood to deliver. Counterpoised to the localists are a group of scholars that I will call the regionalists. They're sort of known in literature as regionalists. And the regionalists, I think, have sort of two main kinds of arguments that support their position and their conception of a just and institutionally viable system of local governments, right? Which involves, the regionalists say, not simply or not even at all the Thiebaud model of lots and lots of local governments, but rather regional governments, right? Regional governments that have a scale over, and it's often left open in the literature what the relevant scale is, and as we've seen several times through the discussions of this conference, trying to delimit what the proper jurisdictional boundaries of a city poses a real challenge, right? But for present purposes, we'll just say the census metropolitan area of cities, right? And so they argue for these kinds of cities in part for reasons of effectiveness, right? That is, so the scholars say, look, in a global marketplace, in a global context where cities compete with one another for businesses and for skill, right, what you need is coordinated efforts to ensure that these metropolitan regions can be governed efficiently, effectively, and you have coordinated policy that does not fragment, that does not result in fragmentation, but allows the city to sort of present a coherent set of policy packages for the good of the entire city region, right? And this is, they say, is frustrated by a Thiebaud-type model of local governments. There are also, in addition to this particular argument about the effectiveness of regional governments, there are arguments about fairness, and fairness in two senses, right? So there are, as several of you have pointed out over the conference, right, concerns about municipal governments that have a lot of autonomy, right, and the possibility of exercising those autonomous powers in ways that are to the detriment of outsiders, right? The so-called problem of exclusionary zoning, right? And as people have pointed out, it imposes all kinds of costs on people who are excluded from higher income municipalities, right? And this seems to be, just as an intuitive matter, a sort of unfair use of local government powers, right? This is layered on, so there is a kind of general economic concern about fairness, right? And in the American context, specifically in the American context, this concern is layered over with a concern about race, right? That is, not only is there a problem of economic disadvantage, right? There are problems of concentrated poverty among racial groups that suffer from historical disadvantage, right? And so two general concerns about fairness, general problems of fairness that are generally economic, and the second sort of disproportionate burden borne by those economic costs by previously disadvantaged, historically disadvantaged communities, right? As I say in the paper, the second concern, the scholarly consensus is less of a concern, but nonetheless, there is some elements of, in Canada, there is some element of it, particularly in Western Canadian cities where you do have concentrations of Aboriginal communities within urban city centers. Right, so these are the two general positions in the debate, right? The Thiebaud model of a system of local governments organized and justified for reasons of efficiency and democratic legitimacy. Regional systems of government organized and justified on the basis of concerns about fairness and effectiveness, right? Effectiveness understood as policy coordination to enable these metropolitan regions to compete against cities worldwide. Okay, so those are the two positions in the debate. What are the criticisms of those positions? So the localist position has been subjected to sustained and, I think, quite damaging criticisms. And I think that the primary criticism that you can advance against the autonomy, the localist position, is about its picture of autonomy, right? Autonomy both for cities and citizens. So first, cities or municipalities, right? The TUBA model assumes that cities are equally able to provide service packages, right? But of course, we know that, and this is what's alluded to in the regional's critique or the regional's position, right? Certain municipalities simply do not have the same level of autonomy. They do not have the same degree of ability to offer service packages at competitive prices that will attract equal numbers of consumers. And this is, I think, really eloquently pointed out by Marie-Claude Permont's series of graphs and slides for the Montreal metropolitan region. Second, there's a concern about the autonomy of citizens. Right, it just simply is not the case, as Martin Blanchard pointed out yesterday, right, that all citizens are equally mobile, or even that most citizens are mobile at all. But in particular, citizens who tend to be economically disadvantaged certainly aren't mobile, and certainly aren't able to participate in the TBU model, in a TBU system of local governments. Right, so there's the criticism against localism is that the central criticism is that this autonomy affirming the autonomy-affirming arguments for localism are simply false, both as to cities and as to citizens. Right. So, what are the concerns about regionalism? I think there are sort of two big concerns about regionalism. Right. One is a concern about democratic deficit. Right. And a second is around assumptions of community. Right. So, first, the concern about democratic deficits. Regional governments take generally two kinds of forms. Right? There's single-tier regional governments, which is the model in the city of Toronto today. Right? And then there are two-tier regional governments, right, in which you have divided jurisdiction between a regional government and then a series of municipal governments. A good model of that latter version was the pre-merger and to some lesser degree, the post-merger metropolitan region of Montreal. Right? So the criticism about democratic deficits is probably the most damaging against single-tier governments, right? That is, if the sort of democratic legitimacy arguments for local governments are that local governments are supposed to be close to the people, permitting democratic participation, right? A single government that spans a metropolitan area the size of Toronto simply does not permit that level of participation. Right, so the democratic gains that are supposed to attend local government regulation simply do not arise with governments the size of regional governments. Right, the second version of the regional governments, right, that is the two-tier model, evades that criticism because you can plausibly make the following argument. Right, citizens in a metropolitan region have their citizenship divided. Right, in some respects they are citizens of regional governments with regional concerns. Right? And in other respects, they are citizens of lower-tier governments, governments that are closer to them, right? A sort of classic version of federalism. Right? So what criticism can be addressed against this two-tier model, which evades the sharpest criticism of the single-tier model? There are essentially two. One is that the jurisdictions between the ability of governments to clearly define and delineate jurisdictions between upper and lower tier municipalities or regional municipal governments is really difficult, right? And so anyone who's looked at federalism understands that trying to draw these lines is an incredibly difficult task. And this uncertainty gives rise to all kinds of problems and wrangling over jurisdiction. A second problem, and this is noted by scholars, is that two-tier regional governments have historically, anyway, almost inexorably given way to single-tier municipalities. Now, sometimes people make the two claims together and say that because the jurisdictions are unclear, eventually what happens is you have a kind of a folding in of the two-tier form into a single-tier form. In either case, you have, if you actually end up in a single-tier form, you give rise to, obviously, all the problems of and the critiques of the single-tier form, the democratic deficit problem. Second problem that's addressed, the second critique that's addressed to regionalism goes around something like an assumption of community, right? So the criticism goes something like, regional governments assume a kind of fellow feeling, to put it in Frank Cunningham's terms, a kind of friendship among citizens within a metropolitan region that simply doesn't exist. There isn't this degree of community, this degree of shared understanding of community across regional, across metropolitan regions, right? And to create regional governments on the assumption that such a fellow feeling exists, right, is to build a system of government on a false assumption, right? This criticism probably has its strongest, sharpest force in the U.S. context, where regional scholars who advocate for regional governments, right, are often pushed into the position of kind of apologizing for their arguments, right? So they'll say, look, regional governments solve all these problems. They solve all these problems of fairness, of effectiveness, right? But regional governments just don't exist, right? They simply don't exist because the polity doesn't want them, right? So the assumption of community across a metropolitan region is false, and it's false to the degree in the United States such that regional governments don't exist at all. Okay, so those are the terms of the debate. Those are the critiques directed at each of the positions within the debate. So let me turn now to what I've called the institutional resolution of the debate, right? And so part of the problem of the debate is that it's kind of a debate at cross purposes, right? So that is, the localist authors tend to sort of push aside or ignore or they fail to address in convincing ways the concerns of the regionalists, in particular the concerns about fairness. The regionalists, in non-reply or in non-response, right, often don't take seriously the concerns about democratic deficits, right, and as I've just alluded to, right, especially in the American context, they have no real response to the problem of the false assumption of regional community. So what kind of institution, right, might allow us to resolve this problem between localists and regionalists? So for an institutional resolution of this problem, although resolution is probably too strong a word, I've gone to the regional district system of British Columbia. So the regional district system of British Columbia, sort of to put it and sketch it in very broad outlines, right, provides for divides the province of British Columbia into 27 regional districts, all the entire